From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Despite a ceasefire declared Saturday at the UN Security Council by a unanimous vote, shelling continued in the eastern Ghouta district of Syria by armed militants. RT's Murad Gazdiev has more.
Russian Reconciliation Center, Ceasefire Monitoring Center in Syria, says that over the last 24 hours, rebels in East Ghouta launched no less than 31 shells into Damascus. And I know what that looks like. Every time we've stayed in Damascus, every time we've been in Damascus, we have heard those shells landing all over the capital, all over Damascus, because East Ghouta is the last rebel stronghold in the vicinity of the capital, their last stranglehold, you know, the revolution's echoes, because all other enclaves around the capital have been retaken by the Syrian government. Nevertheless, these incidents of shelling, they're very random. They shell blindly, you know. A shell might land in a market, it might land in a military base, in a hospital, in a government building. And usually there's a lot of casualties. Over the last 24 hours, a dozen casualties, say Syrian authorities. But the rebels in East Ghouta, Jaish al-Islam, the Army of Islam, which holds, which is the most powerful rebel group in East Ghouta, it says that it is abiding by this ceasefire. It says that it is being shelled and bombed by the Syrian government, and that is indeed happening. There are airstrikes, from what we've gathered from the various reports. There are airstrikes ongoing against East Ghouta, against Jaish al-Islam, the Army of Islam. But the Syrians are saying that, you know, the rebels are shooting at us, and the rebels are saying the Syrians are shooting at us. So there's no ceasefire to speak of quite yet.
Late Monday, Russia's defense minister, Sergei Shoigu, held a press conference on the situation in Syria.
Colleagues, as you know, the day before yesterday, the UN Security Council decided to approve the resolution number 2401, and according to the order of the President of the Russian Federation, we, in order to prevent civilian casualties in the region of the Eastern Ghouta, decided to install, starting from the February 27th, a humanitarian pause from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. That will allow the civilians to leave through the created humanitarian corridor. The coordinates will be circulated soon. At the same time, we understand that the Eastern Ghouta in Syria is not the only hotspot currently when it comes to the plight of people and civilians. We do know that there is a refugee camp called Rukban, controlled by the U.S., and we suggest that the same kind of corridors and pulses shall be installed and organized in the area of El-Tanf and Rukban for the civilians to leave and come back to their homes without any obstacles on the way, so that they can start to reconstruct their homes, come back to peaceful life. We suggest that as soon as possible, the United Nations, for instance, can be the guiding body and a platform for the creation of an international evaluation commission that could look into the real situation in Raqqa, where, unfortunately, we see no one allowed to come. Neither the media nor humanitarian organization are granted access. We see no work on humanitarian aid deliverance, no reconstruction works underway there. This is why people cannot get back to their homes in Raqqa. So these are the orders we've received. To my mind, just as it was before, when we conducted other operations, and we will succeed in ensuring the humanitarian pause, letting people who've been prevented from fleeing the besieged cities by the militants who use them as a human shield, will finally be released, will flee the besieged areas, and the general staff is therefore ordered to start working on the matter.
Again, Monday's fighting on the ground in Syria comes after Saturday's unanimous vote at the UN Security Council calling for a ceasefire. These are the closing comments made by Syria's permanent representative, Bashar al-Ja'afari.
Thank you, Mr. President. In the course of the past 2 days, among the thousands of missiles that were targeting the Syrian capital, the headquarters of the Red Crescent in Damascus was targeted with 10 missiles. It is the main headquarters of the Red Crescent in Syria, which is in a neighborhood called Abu Ramani in Damascus. These missiles were launched by the moderate armed groups in Al Ghouta. Of course, thousands were dead, including a doctor called Hassan. He's a professor at the Technological Health Institute in Damascus. He received condolences from a friend who is French called Thierry Marianne. He's a colleague. Thierry Mariani said the following, and I quote in French.
Hundreds of others. For the past 5 years, Dr. Hassan Hassan was killed by shells launched from Ghouta, Damascus, by the moderate rebels. These dead have no right, are not entitled to media compassion. Oh, they are on the wrong side of history. And then he concludes by stating, when will there be a balance?
So this is a French citizen that truly describes the suffering of people in Damascus as a result of the terrorists launching missiles from Al Ghouta. By the way, Mr. Thierry visited Aleppo in 2017, and the gangs of the Free Syrian Army back then fired rockets in the airport when he was leaving Aleppo. Thank God he wasn't affected, but since then the Aleppo airport remained closed. This airport has not been safe since then, and this is why it was closed. The head of the Syrian Red Crescent in Idlib, Dr. Mohammed Al-Witi, was kidnapped by moderate armed groups. My colleague, the permanent representative of France, said that we must observe a truce. And I say, yes, you are right. However, we also need to implement 29 other Security Council resolutions on the situation in Syria, among them 13 on counterterrorism. So we don't only need a cessation of hostilities for a month. No, we also need the implementation of 29 resolutions that you adopted. My colleague, the British ambassador, presented horrific tales that he heard from other people, as he said. Apparently, he didn't listen to the horrific tales and the violations perpetrated by his forces in Iraq, Palestine, and Libya. The British government, my dear sir, went to Malvinas and fought Argentina for an island that it doesn't own, an island that lies thousands of kilometers away from the United Kingdom. However, your honorable government, and note here that I'm not using the term regime because I respect international law, your honorable government are preventing us from countering terrorism on our own territories. We didn't go thousands of kilometers away. We didn't go and fought other countries. We are combating terrorism on our territories. Terrorism that is supported by the government of your country. Mr. President, in the session on Thursday, I explained the reality of what is happening in Syria, the reality of the suffering of civilians as a result of the practices of armed terrorist groups. I stress once again that the government of the Syrian Arab Republic has taken seriously all de-escalation initiatives and observed them to protect the lives of our citizens and to stop those trading with their blood. In this regard, I note that the Syrian government has complied with the Astana Agreement on establishing de-escalation zones. It stipulated a number of commitments, among them compelling the signatory armed groups to sever any ties they have with terrorist organizations, especially ISIS and Al-Nusra Front, and any other affiliated groups. The agreement, the Astana Agreement, at the same time, gave the Syrian government the right to respond in case of any violations by those armed groups. It was not surprising at all to us that these armed terrorist groups would not comply with any of those initiatives. They would use these agreements as an opportunity to reorganize its forces, to reorganize its fighters, to receive more military equipment, logistical support, and to perpetuate its crimes against the Syrian people. They're, of course, receiving instructions from member states. Some are members of this council, and some regional actors that are practicing state terrorism to ensure the obstruction and failure of those initiatives and agreements. Mr. President, since the signing of the agreement on the establishment of de-escalation zones, these armed groups have systematically violated the agreement. In responding to these violations, the Syrian government has exercised extreme self-restraint to protect the lives of civilians and to salvage this agreement that armed terrorist groups and the countries that sponsor them are trying to obstruct from the moment of the signing. However, these violations have become repeated and serious and have affected the lives of 8 million civilians living in Damascus. Missiles and rockets are being launched, car bombs are being used, and Syrian military sites are being targeted. All this has led to a situation that we cannot condone. We bear a responsibility as a state towards our citizens, and we have a sovereign right to counter terrorism. We're also receiving appeals, repeated appeals from Syrian citizens asking for protection for their families, for their children, for their schools, protection from the practices of these armed terrorist groups. In light of these violations and these terrorist actions, the Syrian government had to take the necessary steps to protect our citizens. We exercised our legitimate right to defend them, and at the same time, we took all necessary steps to ensure the safety of civilians that those groups are taking hostage and using as human shields inside Eastern Ghouta. We also ensured a safe passage to ensure the exit of civilians in cooperation with our friends in Russia from 4 to 14th of February to ensure the exit of civilians. We provided shelter and food and necessary medical care. The government paid for all those steps. We called upon armed groups to lay down their arms and to stop their terrorism and stop targeting residential areas and to engage in national reconciliation initiatives. Of course, the appeals of 8 million Syrians do not reach the Secretariat and do not reach the mailbox of the representative of the United States, the UK, and France. Although they do receive appeals from their proxies, armed terrorist groups, and the appeals of white helmet terrorists, the new legitimate representative of Al-Nusra Front. It seems that these countries decided today to replace the black flags of ISIS and Al-Qaeda with white flags in Iraq and white helmets in Syria. So we're done with the black color, now we're using the white color. Mr. President, the basic principle that governs the delivery of humanitarian aid, according to Resolution 182/46 that we negotiated on and reached consensus on, is the respect of the sovereignty of the country concerned and coordinate with it fully in any activity that the United Nations is engaged in on the territories of this country. However, these principles lose all value and are subject to the political whims and double standards of the Secretariat and some of the influential countries when it is about implementing those principles in Syria. How else can we explain that some countries table draft resolutions on the situation in Syria and negotiate these draft resolutions for many weeks with all actors, with all parties, with the exception of the country concerned? This is what I stated the day before yesterday. How do we explain that the resident coordinator in Damascus sends to the Syrian foreign minister a note on the 14th of February 2018 stressing that aid convoys reached 2.3 million people in the so-called besieged and hard-to-reach areas during 2017, while the Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs presented completely false figures to tarnish the image of the Syrian government and to give to Western countries in the Security Council justifications to target the Syrian government and its partners. So the resident coordinator said that aid had reached 2.3 million people. Mr. Lowcock, 2 days ago, said that aid has reached only 20,000 people. Mr. President, we have said repeatedly, along with some members of this council, over the past 7 years, that to end the suffering of civilians, we do not need non-consensual draft resolutions. We do not need to adopt news resolutions. We do not need holding ordinary or emergency sessions. We do not need to deplete UN resources to prepare periodic reports that rely on unreliable sources. We do not need to establish a committee here and a body there. We need to implement the 29 Security Council resolutions. Now they've become 30 resolutions. What a coincidence. By adopting the resolution today, we have reached 30 resolutions. So please implement them. The governments of some countries should stop spending millions of dollars to support terrorists in Syria. The latest we've heard is that the USA has allocated $4 billion in its actions in Syria. Those countries must stop opening its borders and airports to facilitate the flow of terrorist fighters. They must allow the Syrian people to shape its future and regain the stability of the region without any foreign interference. You, President, Mr. President, you said that the Council rejects anything that violates the principles and purposes of the Charter. This is very precise. And you called for the implementation of this resolution in all parts of Syria. This is how we interpret this resolution. This resolution needs to be implemented in all parts of Syria, including Afrin, including the areas controlled by the United States, including the Golan. What we also need, ladies and gentlemen, is for the governments of these countries, and I say very clearly who they are, the USA, the UK, and France, these governments should stop holding meetings in Washington, Paris, and London. It should stop establishing groups and bodies and forums. It should stop devising strategic plans. That's what they're called, strategic plans, reminiscent of the colonial times. They must be aware that these strategic plans to divide Syria, that's what they're called. They got together in Washington and announced that they devised a plan to divide Syria within 1 year. I'm just telling you what they said. These strategic plans to divide Syria and to change the political system by force, here again, I am quoting from the document that was adopted in Washington. They should stop these strategic plans to spread terrorism and ensure the illegitimate military presence on our territories. I say that to my colleague from the United States, as threatened us before you all, and no one has responded to her. I'm saying that all this will not succeed and it will backfire sooner or later. According to Article 51 of the Charter, my country has the right to defend ourselves with all legal tools. There is a military presence, a colonial presence, a U.S. presence in our country, and we have the right to respond to that. She threatened us, and we're threatening her from this rostrum because we have the right to defend ourselves according to Article 51 of the Charter. We stress once again that double standards will continue to mar international efforts to counter terrorism. As long as we stick to this limited and flawed approach in dealing with armed groups in Syria. Today, some of you are claiming that they're concerned about an area controlled by terrorist armed groups in eastern Ghouta. The area is 50 square kilometers. The area you're talking about has an area of 50 square kilometers. They are while ignoring and disregarding three illegal occupation of Syrian territories, and the area of those territories amounts to 50,000 square kilometers. So we're talking about 50 square kilometers, and we're ignoring an area of 50,000 square kilometers. I'm talking here about American, Turkish, and Israeli occupation. This simple comparison reflects the political hypocrisy of some member states and the incapacity of the Security Council and the other United Nations bodies, as this organization is succumbing to political and financial polarization, which has become the main feature of the working methods of the organization. Mr. President, in conclusion, we will continue to support our allies to counter terrorism wherever it is in Syria, wherever it is. We are exercising a sovereign right of self-defense and a constitutional right in our territories and within our national borders, not in Malvinas.
Asia.
And we're not sending conquering forces thousands of kilometers away, just as the so-called international coalition is doing. We're not doing as the French forces are doing in Mali and in African countries, not as what the United States and the United Kingdom are doing in Afghanistan, Libya, and Iraq. We're countering terrorism within our territories. We didn't go to Mali, we didn't go to Niger, we didn't go to Argentina. What we need today is a serious engagement by those governments who are giving instructions to armed terrorist groups. They should give instructions to those groups to stop immediately. And I say immediately and not without delay, as this resolution stipulates, to stop immediately targeting civilians, stop immediately with terrorist actions. I stress that our government will reserve the right to respond as it deems appropriate in case those terrorist armed groups are targeting civilians in any part of Syria with even one single missile. I take into account that we understand the first operative paragraph of this resolution, this new resolution, as follows. It applies also to the aggression of Turkish forces in Afrin and the operations of the anti-ISIL coalitions in Syria. Of course, this resolution applies to the aggression of Israeli forces in Syria, especially the occupied Syrian Golan. This is how we interpret the resolution just adopted, Mr. President. Thank you very much.
Aside from Russia, Syria has found an ally in Iran in its battle with the various terrorist groups seeking to topple the government in Damascus. This was Iran's foreign minister, Javad Zarif, speaking in Belgrade Monday.
As you know, Iran, along with Russia and Turkey, have tried and succeeded for bringing down the level of hostilities in Syria over the past year. We continue to believe that Syria requires a political solution and there is no military solution in Syria. We also believe that there is a need for the international community to come together to assist the people of Syria to fight against terrorism and extremism, which has unfortunately ravaged the country and brought a lot of bloodshed to the country over the past many years. So we hope that the resolution by the Security Council will bring about reduction of hostilities and an end to activities by terrorist organizations, as well as reduction of hostilities both in Damascus and in other parts of Syria, in order for the Syrian people to be able to move through the political process that started in Sochi last month.
Also on Monday, the European Union's foreign minister, Federica Mogherini, called on Iran, Russia, and Turkey as guarantors to ensure that a process of de-escalation takes place in Syria.
We had a long and very constructive and positive meeting with the foreign ministers of the countries of the League of Arab States, plus the Secretary General of the League of Arab States. We expect full and immediate implementation of the UN Security Council resolution that was just adopted in New York the other day, for which I would like to thank the role that played Kuwait as chair of the Council, but also of all the members of the European Union that are currently members of the UN Security Council that have worked night and day, literally, to achieve consensus on resolution that for us is very important, in particular Sweden. I will send a letter today to the three foreign ministers of the three guarantors of the Astana process, Russia, Turkey and Iran, to ask them to, as guarantors of the Astana process, work for the implementation of the UN Security Council resolution, and in particular for the implementation of the de-escalation zones that were decided in Astana and for which they have a role to play.
Meanwhile, more forces from Turkey crossed the border into Syria as Ankara was widening its offensive against Kurdish militants despite the UN calls for a ceasefire. Political analyst Adam Gary, based in London, spoke with Press TV's Kovi Tavwe about the Turkish offensive and about the apparent impotence of the UN Security Council.
Well, the UN has been largely discredited by the malevolent antics of Nikki Haley and her cohorts. As for the general terms of the ceasefire, Russia was very careful and frankly very clever to put in a crucial provision which says that terrorist groups as recognized by the UN are exempted from the ceasefire. This is what has allowed the Syrian Arab Army and its partners to continue draining the swamp of Takfiri jihadist snakes from the East Ghouta region, which have threatened the safety and livelihood of many innocent people in the Syrian capital of Damascus. In respect of the YPG, Turkey, which is a part of the Astana group, which also includes Russia and Iran, views them as a terrorist group, and their sister organization, PKK, is widely regarded by most international players as a terrorist group. The Afrin Front in the Syrian conflict wasn't specified in the discussions surrounding the UN resolution, so there is a bit of room for ambiguity. Turkey is pursuing it one way. The French President Macron is clearly interested in pursuing it another way. Finally, because Turkey is part of the Astana group, the lingering disputes that Syria and Turkey have must only be addressed through a political process. No one stands to gain anything through a direct confrontation between the Turkish military and the Syrian Arab Army. For that, there's the Astana process, and there are other diplomatic channels which Russia has encouraged all parties to use. That's the only sensible way forward in that respect.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.